Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Apothecary Herbs announces a brand new formula to help balance blood pressure from head to foot, strengthen your heart muscle, and reduce cholesterol. Now you have a professional strength alternative that works all without fear or worry of serious side effects. Empower yourself. Become independent from the expensive drugs. Call Apothecary Herbs and ask for heart, blood pressure, and cholesterol formula toll-free. 866-229-3663. Or online at thepowerherbs.com. Heart, blood pressure, and cholesterol formula is just $24.95 and comes with a money-back guarantee. So get a pencil and write this down. Apothecary Herbs, toll-free, 866-229-3663, or on the web at thepowerherbs.com.
Hey, does civilization seem stable to you? When 911 is busy or law enforcement decides to hide rather than protect you, don't worry. With Spike Training, you will know exactly what to do. Through a series of approximately 96 hours of video training seminars, Bo Greif, America's most decorated Green Beret commander, and his team of professional instructors brings his special forces training to your home through digital video. Delivered priority mail on a 128-gigabyte USB flash drive and 960 by 640 quality, you will receive the same instruction that Special Operations Command elite troops receive. There are no guarantees in life, but education and preparation always better your odds for survival. Go to bogreitz.us, that's B-O-G-R-I-T-Z.us, or avrn.tv to arrange to receive your 12 phases of Spike training. Single-phase downloads are also available on the site.
Welcome to the Constitutional Crusaders Show on the American Voice Radio Network. I am your host, Dr. Emroy Ben Shadler, Constitutional Counsel, and still all-around pain in the rear end to bureaucrats and petty thugs all over. Today is Monday, June 21st, the longest day of the year in the Northern Hemisphere. Consequently, it's the shortest day of the year in the Southern Hemisphere. So in the Southern Hemisphere, they're celebrating the Southern Hemisphere version of Short Girl Appreciation Day, because it's the shortest day of the year down there. Up here, we're celebrating, I guess, Tall Man Appreciation Day as the longest day of the year. But I digress. It is the 3 o'clock hour out here in the Left Coast. If you're listening to some other time zone, obviously you're going to have to adjust your clocks accordingly so you can be in sync with this show. This is a show for thinkers, especially critical thinkers, and if you are such, you will enjoy this show. If, however, you are a member of the Southern Poverty Law Center, Media Matters, or if you are an IRS agent pretending to be a government agent, well, this show might make you feel slightly uncomfortable, so therefore, we give you an exemption on thinking because, after all, we don't want to create a hostile work environment. If you'd like to send a direct instant message to your host, you may do so through 541-248-9307. I do appreciate them all. I know I'm still a little backlogged on replying to some of them. I apologize. There's so much going on, and then when I do have some free time, I forget about it, and then later I go, oh, crap, I could have used that free time to answer some of those messages. Life goes on. I apologize. Like I said, though, you still may send them, and I do read them, and I do appreciate them. As is our want, my friends, we like to open this show with the wisdom of the ages, otherwise known as the dead white guy quote. If the natural tendencies of mankind are so bad that it is not safe to permit people to be free, how is it that the tendencies of these organizers are always good? Do not the legislators and their appointed agents also belong to the human race? Or do they believe that they themselves are made of a finer clay than the rest of mankind, end quote. Frederick Bastiat had it right. Think about what I'm going to talk about today. Think about cancel culture and critical race theory and blamptifa. The thoughts that are swirling in your mind, if they are not terrifying to you, then you have not been paying attention. Okay, we got 24 pages in our show newsletter, your instant messages, smoke signals, whatever else happens to come across to Transom, and we will get to as much of it as possible right after this little disclaimer.
Warning, this show may be hazardous to your paradigms if you are a whiny, crying, liberal, pinko, commie bedwetter, an inept, overpaid bureaucrat, or are still mad over Reagan's tax cut. Should you fit into any one of the above categories, immediately have your friends tie you down for some truth therapy. Continue this therapy until you can dismiss your delusions and can deal with reality. If you cannot handle 100% pure, unadulterated truth, this radio show will not be held responsible for your predictable discomfort.
Welcome back to the show. Sorry about that. I was a little slow on the unmute button there. Remember, my friends, my job is very simple. To comfort the disturbed and to disturb the comfortable. And I do it the same way you can, but only if you continue to support this show. You have a choice. You can take that blue pill. You can change the station. You can fail to support this show and this network. And the end result, you wake up in your bed, you believe whatever you want to believe, and this show and this network, it just ceases to exist. Tra-la-la, life is good. Or you take that red pill, you support this show and this network, and I continue to show you just how deep that rabbit hole goes. I'm only offering you the truth, my friends, but the truth does not come free. You have to fight for it. And speaking of fighting for it, my friends, I have a question. Why has the right, you know, the right wing, why have they decided to let the Floyd cop fry? That's a very legitimate question. See, if they don't speak up, no one will. Because you know the old poem by Nehemiah, you know, First they came for this, then they came for that, then they came for this, and by the time they came for me, there was no one left to speak up for me. You know, because Martin Niemöller, he didn't speak up. And by the time they did come for him, there was no one left to speak up. So It's the same thing. Jack Cashkill starts by including an email from a friend who said to him, "I told my daughter to make sure her two sons don't get any toys, cars, costumes for Halloween, etc., that have police on them. Both their grandfathers were cops, and I think that is where the family business should end. It is absolutely crazy what street cops have to put up with all day long as the result of this BS. Well, the attorneys for former Minneapolis police officer Thao, I think is how it's pronounced, filed a motion that should have been headline news on the right side of the internet. If you've heard about it, then you've been just paying attention more than most people, because it wasn't, and there's no surprise there. For the past year, conservative media and political leaders have been shockingly quiet about the flagrant assaults on due process surrounding the death of George Floyd, and feeling that they had something to say something about the Derek Chauvin verdict. Well, the Republicans in Congress, well, they seem to take their cues from Pontius Pilate, such as, "I think the jury did its job," said Iowa Senator Joni Ernst, all too typically. Quote, "And I did not follow, of course, all the parts of the trial. But I would say that given the information they received, they did their job, and I guess I'm in agreement," end quote. Yeah, the sound of hands being washed echoed throughout Capitol Hill. But Thao was Derek Chauvin's partner, a 9-year veteran of the Minneapolis Police Department, and Thao is the son of Hmong parents who fled the communists in Southeast Asia only to find the commies' ideological heirs dictating justice in the riotous streets of Minneapolis. On the fateful night of May 25th, 2020, Thao unknowingly helped trigger those mobs. See, while Calvin and two rookie officers, J. Alexander Kuhn and Thomas Lane, struggled with the huge and aggressively intoxicated Floyd, Thao, in the anodyne prose of the state complaint, quote, "became concerned about a number of citizens who had gathered and were watching the officers subdue Mr. Floyd and potential traffic concerns, and so the defendant stood between those civilians and the three officers," end quote. The complaint continues like this, quote, "When one citizen stepped off the curb, imploring Chauvin to get off Mr. Floyd, the defendant, that would be Thao, put his hands on the citizens to keep him back. The words, that is, that the citizen used to implore Thao and Chauvin include," are you ready? Quote, "I dare you to touch me like that. I swear I'll slap the effing out of you, out of both of you," end quote. The state has charged Thao with two counts of aiding and abetting, one for second-degree murder, the other for second-degree manslaughter. He could be sentenced to as many as 40 years in prison for the crime of stopping a hostile crowd from attacking his fellow officers. In addition, he faces federal charges for civil rights violations. Now, in his motion, the one that, unless you was really paying attention and looking for it, you never heard about, Thao established beyond argument that his trial will be, if anything, less fair than Chauvin's. The motion deals primarily with alleged witness coercion, which I have documented on this show, my friends, by Dr. Roger Mitchell, a former chief medical officer of the Washington, D.C., and the current chair of the pathology department at Howard University College of Medicine, Mitchell has served as chairman of My Brother's Keeper DC, a program launched, surprise, surprise, by then President B.O. So he is a man of some influence. And Thau's evidence is compelling. Reportedly, Mitchell subverted justice on two separate fronts, which I've told you about, but I will briefly synopsis here. According to the motion, he threatened to write a disparaging op-ed about Dr. Andrew Baker, the Hennepin County Chief Medical Examiner, if he failed to amend. In other words, he coerced him to change and subvert his autopsy findings. And as the only doctor to have examined Floyd's body immediately after his death, Baker's opinion mattered. See, his autopsy report, quote, revealed no physical findings that support a diagnosis of traumatic asphyxia or strangulation, end quote. Now, my friends, if you was listening carefully, you would see that was a problem for the persecution, because without a finding of asphyxia or at least neck compression, the state could not charge Chauvin and the officers with second-degree murder. So according to Thau's motion, Mitchell called Baker a second time to give him a heads up on the threatened Washington Post op-ed and warned him, quote, you don't want to be the medical examiner who tells everyone they didn't see what they saw. And then he added that, quote, neck compression has to be in the diagnosis, end quote. Well, to paraphrase good old Joe Biden, well, son of a bitch, neck compression was in the diagnosis, end quote. Apparently appeased, Mitchell never wrote the op-ed. That's why you never saw it. And Mitchell was not at all coy. In his second attempt at coercion, a week after Dr. David Fowler testified in Chauvin's defense, Mitchell wrote an open letter to the Maryland Attorney General Brian Frosch. Mitchell called for, quote, an immediate investigation into the practices of Fowler as well as the practice of the Maryland State Office of the Chief Medical Examiner while under his leadership, end quote. See, as I've told you before on this show, Fowler had served 17 years as Maryland's Chief Medical Examiner, and less than 24 hours after Mitchell posted that letter, Frosch launched a review. And the media reported the story of Frosch's investigation with borderline glee. So, Thau's attorneys have argued with good cause that, quote, Dr. Mitchell's accusations and spurring of legal fallacies creates a chilling effect for Mr. Thau and violates his due process right in that it has become extraordinarily difficult to find medical experts who are willing to state that Mr. Floyd's death was undetermined in fear of their professional reputation and licensure, end quote. With only a very few exceptions, the conservative media reported on this latest outrage as matter-of-factly as they had on the sundry other injustices that deformed the Chauvin trial. And their reticence has consequences. Feeling isolated and abandoned, police officers are now inclined to approach black suspects as gingerly as they would an unexploded IED. As some police have said, quote, it is absolutely crazy what street cops have to put up with all day long as a result of this BS, end quote. Well, my friends, this has had consequences. See, late last week in Portland, the Multnomah County District Attorney, because, see, Portland is Multnomah County, and Multnomah County is Portland. I mean, they're one and the same. So the Multnomah County District Attorney, he charged one of the 53 riot cops with well, charged him with an indictment, okay? And then, of course, that subjects him to criminal prosecution, and the other 52 members of the riot squad, they resigned en masse. There's no more riot squad in Portland. And, of course, this was right on the eve of riot weekend, and Portland burned. Surprise, surprise, surprise. Because there was no more riot squad, and nobody wanted to come out and be part of the riot squad. Not after one of their members was arrested, indicted, charged with a crime for being a riot squad officer. So, the best cops out there in other areas, they try and do their jobs anyhow. And the smart cops turn a blind eye to crimes committed by black people. And the thugs have gotten the message, which accounts for the unholy surge in black-on-black homicides post-Floyd. And that crime wave is getting worse. And veteran cops are overwhelming HR departments with retirement requests, and worthy new recruits are scarcer commodity than, well, brave congressional Republicans. And the problem goes deeper than finding good cops, much deeper. Quote, "It was a murder in the full light of day," end quote, said Vice President Biden of Floyd's death, quote, "and it ripped the blinders off for the whole world to see the systemic racism that is a stain on our nation's soul," end quote. Well, Biden's perverse condemnation of America represents more than mere narrative. It has become the gospel of the Church of Anti-Racism, whose most revered martyr is now the late Mr. Floyd. Sorry, Michael, and sorry, Trayvon, you know, it's you're no longer around. Quote, "We are all part of the George Floyd legacy," said Kamala Toe Deep, Veep Throat, there we go, Harris, quote, "Our new job is to honor it and honor him," end quote. And House Speaker Nancy Pelosi was even more reverential. She said, quote, "Thank you, George Floyd, for sacrificing your life for justice," end quote. That's what the deluded Pelosi said shortly after the verdict. Then she went on to say, "For being there to call out to your mom, how heartbreaking was that? And because of you, your name will always be synonymous with justice," end quote. Now, my friends, no religion has ever honored a less worthy or willing martyr. But then again, as Chauvin and his colleagues can attest, few other religions offer sinners neither justice nor mercy, let alone the hope of redemption. The Church of the Anti-Racism works its dark magic through guilt and fear. Its evangelists have already intimidated corporate America and academia into silence, and to challenge its theology or question its martyrs is to blaspheme, and blasphemy has already cost many dissenters their careers. Conservatives cannot guess about how they feel. They need to educate themselves about this case before Chauvin's sentencing and the federal trials of the four officers later this summer. And if they do not speak up, no one will. And if they do not speak up now, the cost of blasphemy will only get higher. And that's what we have to look forward to, my friends. Yeah. Now, every now and then, a little truth leaks out. And I want to tell you about that little bit of truth that's leaked out this past weekend. Fort Lauderdale mayor walked back claim of terrorist attack at the Pride Parade. Now, in case you didn't hear about this, I want to tell you about this. Mayor Dean Trantless, Democrat, surprise, surprise, of Fort Lauderdale, Florida, is walking back his claim that a fatal crash at a gay pride event was a terrorist attack after it transpired that both the driver and the victims were part of the gay men's choir. As the Associated Press had reported, the driver of a pickup truck, quote, slammed into spectators Saturday evening at the start of a pride parade in South Florida, killing one man and seriously injuring another, end quote. Well, Mayor Trantless claimed immediately that the incident was deliberate, even declaring that it was a terrorist attack against the LGBTW, whatever the W stands for, community, end quote. However, as Breitbart News noted late Saturday night, quote, Justin Knight, president of the Fort Lauderdale's Gay Men's Chorus, said that both the driver and the victims of a tragic accident at a gay pride parade were part of his group, end quote. Well, the Miami and Fort Lauderdale area ABC affiliates Local 10 reported that Knight had said in a statement, quote, our fellow chorus members were those injured and the driver was also part of the chorus family. To my knowledge, this was not an attack on the LGBTQ community, end quote. Well, I'm going to tell you what the mayor did when he tried to walk back his claim on the other side of the break, my friends. You're going to want to hear this because it's really good. You're listening to the Constitutional Crusader Show on the American Voice Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free 866-229-3663 or online thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
So things fall apart. Do you know how to defend yourself using a coup baton, pepper gas spray, or taekwondo techniques? After spike training, you will. What about how to enter a securely locked installation or vehicle? After spike training, you will. What about street confrontation shooting, or how to organize the virtually untrained into force multipliers, or caching techniques to secure valuable and sensitive items on your person, within structures, and in the field, or combat assault rappelling, or instinctive shooting, or something as simple as knot tying and rope making? Well, after spike training, you will. And I have only mentioned a few of the subjects covered only up to phase 6. Go to bogrites.us, that's bogrites.us, or avrn.tv to arrange to receive your 12 phases of spike training. Single phase downloads are also available on the site. In this time of the social and spiritual breakdown of America and the world, in these prophetic end times, God is calling multitudes of Christians to the Ozarks and other safe havens around the world to survive so they can spread the gospel.
The Ark Haven Intentional Neighbors vision is to prepare Christians physically, mentally, and spiritually for these end times. Thousands are coming to the Ozark Mountains in Arkansas and Missouri, where even the CIA says it's one of the safest places on earth. The intentional neighbors concept allows Christian neighbors to own adjacent land to each other so they can aid and help each other. The community is exploding with nurses, a doctor, and other professionals, as well as many others. If you cannot afford to buy a house, you can rent a house. Call 479-502-1789. That's 479-502-1789. Or visit arkhaven.org. That's arkhaven.org. Tell them Pastor Dan sent you.
And welcome back to the Constitutional Crusaders Show on the American Voice Radio Network. I'm your host, Dr. M. Roy Ben Shadler, constitutional counsel and Phil all around, pain in the rear end to bureaucrats and petty thugs all over. My friends, like I said, the Fort Lauderdale mayor, Tarantulas, he tried to walk back his claim of a terrorist attack, claiming in a Facebook post that he had been terrorized. He did not apologize, nor did he explain why he felt the need to jump to conclusions about the motives for the crash. Surprise, 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 my friends. Yeah. When do the left ever apologize? They never do. I'm not going to say never, but it's so rare as to be as rare as chicken's teeth, my friends, when they do. And a little update. The police have said that the driver, a 77-year-old man, accelerated accidentally in a quote-unquote tragic accident. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, speaking of hubris, you're going to love this, my friends. No remorse. China now says, hang on to your seats, China now says the Wuhan lab deserves a Nobel Prize. I am not reading the Babylon Bee, my friends. No, late last week, the Chinese Academy of Sciences nominated the Wuhan Institute, we'll just call it WIV from now on, the Wuhan Institute of Virology for its Outstanding Science and Technology Achievement Prize, specifically naming Xi Zingli, a.k.a. Batwoman, and Wan Zhiming, director of the WIV's Wuhan National Biosafety Laboratory. The Chinese state-run media explained that, quote, the award is mainly given to individuals or research groups who have made or demonstrated significant achievements in the past 5 years. China's foreign ministry spokesperson stressed at Thursday's press conference that scientists working at the WIV should be awarded the Nobel Prize in Medicine rather than being blamed for being the first to discover the gene sequence of the novel coronavirus, end quote. Well, what can I say, my friends? We've got to admit it. The Institute's work really has touched all our lives, hasn't it? And just think how many medical breakthroughs we've seen in the past 18 months from Pfizer and Moderna and Oxford and Johnson & Johnson that never would have occurred if it hadn't been for the earlier work of the WIV.
Yeah, the WIVs work literally brought the world to a screeching halt. It even made late-night television funny again. Well, snark aside, my friends, the fact that the Chinese government insists the Wuhan Institute of Virology deserves celebration is another indicator that it intends to change nothing in the aftermath of this plandemic. In her recent brief interview with the New York Times, Xi Jingli said that, quote, bat viruses in China could be studied in BSL-2 labs because there was no evidence that they directly infected humans. Now, my friends, biosafety level 2 laboratories are designed to work with moderately dangerous viruses such as staph infections, hepatitis, or HIV. Biosafety level 4 facilities, which is what the WIV is supposed to be, work with the most dangerous viruses, particularly contagious pathogens such as Ebola and Marburg. But Xi's argument wants it both ways. See, part of the argument in support of the zootonic theory of SARS-CoV-2's origin is that the new viruses jump from animal to people all the time, and thus that is what most likely happened in this case. Now, note that past research by the WIV studying the people who live closest to the known habitats of horseshoe bats in the Hunan province, which, by the way, is like 250 miles away, found that just 2.7% of people have antibodies indicating past exposure to bat viruses. So one option that it's extremely unusual for bat viruses to infect human beings, which makes the SARS-CoV-2 extremely different from most viruses found in horseshoe bats, suggesting something about the virus may have been altered or stepped up to make it more contagious among human beings. Or another option is that it isn't so rare for bat viruses to infect human beings, which would suggest that these viruses should be studied in BSL-2 laboratories. Come on, Xi. Pick one! And note, my friends, just to give you a scant example, the extra equipment, expense, and precautions required for BSL-4 labs. So in addition to all BSL-3 considerations, which are in addition to all BSL-2 considerations, which are in addition to all BSL-1 considerations, BSL-4 laboratories have the following containment requirements, such as personnel are required to change clothing before entering, shower upon exiting, and decontamination of all materials before exiting, and personnel must wear appropriate personal protective equipment from prior BSL levels, as well as a full body, air supplied, positive pressure suit. And finally, it must have at least a Class 3 biological safety cabinet. And a BSL-4 laboratory is extremely isolated, often located in a separate building or in an isolated and restricted zone of the building. The laboratory also features a dedicated supply and exhaust air, as well as vacuum lines and decontamination systems. So if you listen to this and wonder why anyone would want to build a BSL-4 laboratory in the middle of a city with 11 million people that's an international trade and commerce hub? Yeah. Oh, and you know, my friends, who the Chinese Academy of Sciences did not nominate as a, quote, individual who has made or demonstrated significant achievements in the past 5 years? Well, that would be Dr. Li Wenliang. You know, the Wuhan ophthalmologist who desperately tried to warn his colleagues about the danger of COVID-19 and was charged with a crime for it. And mysteriously, he ultimately died of the disease. Imagine that! Yeah! Now, related to what I just shared with you, and included in the same link, is this. China. See, our vaccine exports are better because... Yeah, how the state-run Chinese Daily covers China sending vaccine doses overseas. Quote, many rich nations now sit on vaccine surpluses so large that they could treat their populations several times over. Around 1.8 billion vaccines have been administered across the globe, and close to one-third of those have gone to people living in the G7 group of wealthy economies, while just 0.3% have been distributed in countries classed as low-income, according to Our World in Data. Chinese vaccines went global several months ago. China has already sent more than 350 million doses abroad, including exports to more than 50 countries and donations to more than 80 countries, according to Jing Yizin, Vice Minister of National Health Commission, end quote. Well, that's how the China Daily has covered it. Let's look how the state-run Global Times covers the U.S.'s sending vaccines overseas. Quote, regarding the entry of these anti-epidemic supplies into Taiwan, both the U.S. and Taiwan statements are blatant political operation. They have given themselves away by conspicuously and hypocritically pretending their innocence, end quote. Well, my friend, from where I'm standing, one of the key differences is that the U.S. is shipping Taiwan 2.5 million doses of the Moderna vaccine, which is reported to be 50% effective 2 weeks after the first dose and approximately 94.1% effective 2 weeks after the second dose. But meanwhile, China is sending the Sinopharm vaccine, which is proving so unreliable that in Bahrain, high-risk individuals who are fully vaccinated with the Sinopharm vaccine are being encouraged to get the Pfizer one. And the other Chinese vaccine, Sinovac, had an efficacy rate of just over 50% in a study conducted by Brazil's Butantan Institute. But I'm sure, there's nothing wrong with that vaccine that a creative marketing department can't fix. You know, something like, let's see if I can do a radio announcer voice here. You know that, because risk is what makes life exciting. There! Did that make it sound like something you want to run out and get shot into your arm? What? It didn't? Oh, okay. Well, I guess I'm not very good at marketing then. I apologize. I'm sorry. Okay. Wow. Okay. Okay. Time for the critical thinking segment, my friends. And as always, we like to open with a quote from Voltaire, who said, quote, judge a man by his questions rather than by his answers, end quote. Now, my friends, for those of you that are new to this show, and I know we got a lot of them because I hear from you and you tell me about how you're just new to the show, or you've returned to listening to AVR for after a long spell, or things like that. Well, let me give you a clue here. The critical thinking segment is where I usually take an article of exceptionally good critical thinking skills and present it to you as a way for you to help model and program your own brain to engage in superior critical thinking skills. Or, on the other hand, I sometimes take an article of exquisitely horrible critical thinking skills to show you how not to do it. Today's article really isn't either one of those, but I'm presenting it to you because it does present some things that if you have been practicing critical thinking skills will get your brain firing on all eight cylinders at full RPM. So here we go. 10 huge corporations working to make big bucks from forcing Americans into vaccine passport. Now, states have been pushing back on this idea of vaccine passports for people to have to prove that they have received the COVID-19 vaccine to do anything outside their homes. For example, Republican Florida Governor Ron DeSantis signed an executive order banning the passports in his state, as did Governor Greg Abbott in Texas, with dozens of other states advancing that same type of legislation. And all those skepticism about instituting private surveillance of the population is increasing by the day, the government is pushing vaccine passports in cahoots with private companies. So here are just some of the big companies that are showing themselves willing to act as a shadow government to privately force on Americans a regime they did not consent to through representative legitimate government. Let's start with IBM. The state of New York has been first state in the nation to implement a vaccine passport, the Excelsior Pass, developed by IBM, launched in March, and is used by Madison Square Garden and other venues to verify people have received an immunization. The software is based on IBM's Digital Health Pass. Already, privacy attorneys have raised issues with it, especially its ability to be hacked. Now, an update for you, my friends. If your critical thinking skills haven't fired on this already, shame on you. You haven't been paying attention to these episodes, but that's okay. If you're new, I'll give an exemption to those that are new, but those of you that are long-term listeners should be going like, if its ability to be hacked, what does that mean? Well, it means that there's a huge black market out there for Excelsior passes. So you get an Excelsior pass on your phone and you flash in and say, see, I've been vaccinated. Yeah. Now, Albert Foxconn, executive director of the Surveillance Technology Oversight Project, noted that it only took 11 minutes to hack the IBM software, and Khan hacked the system by merely searching for vaccination cards, which people have posted on Twitter, and he called passes the worst of both worlds. And in September, IBM received $23 million in funding from the National Institutes of Health in order to, oh, by the way, the National Institutes of Health, you know, run by Fauci, which was sending money to the WIV for stepped-up research. Oh, that National Institute of Health. Yes, in order to develop, quote, digital health solutions that help address the COVID-19 pandemic, end quote. Wow. Next, MasterCard. MasterCard's ID verification spurned BeWell, Connected Health. That's B, period, well, Connected Health. that's their name, to partner with it on, quote, collecting COVID-19 vaccination records, end quote. Quote, as an example, individuals who've been identity proofed through BeWell's platform will unlock additional sources of data where BeWell can collect COVID-19 vaccination records in order to provide a vaccination passport consumers can use for travel, events, or other activities that require a vaccine passport to participate, said Philip Johnson, Chief Strategy and Innovation Officer at BeWell. Now, for those of you who may be scratching your head and going, well, that's never going to happen. No. Then you haven't been paying attention. There was an eruption here, my friends, since this was put into place, where an island in the Caribbean was literally split in half with a volcanic eruption. And those on the one side of the island could not flee, at least overland, to the other side of the island to escape the rushing poisons of the toxic cloud erupting from the volcano or the lava or other debris coming down. So they were all forced to get on cruise ships, which arrived at the docks and started taking people on like crazy, except they would only take people who could prove that they were, quote-unquote, fully vaccinated. If you could not show that you were fully vaccinated, you were left there to die. It's happening, and that's not the first time, or the last. So, in 2018, back to the critical thinking here on MasterCard. MasterCard already began developing digital records software. MasterCard partnered with Gavi, the Vaccine Alliance, to create, quote, digital immunization records, end quote, for people in poorer communities. Quote, centralization of immunization records will allow local governments to assess vaccination programs and adjust accordingly, end quote. That was what they said in the USA Today, claiming, while ignoring the privacy implications of a centralized, privately controlled database of confidential patient information. Then we have Salesforce, Oracle, Microsoft, Mayo Clinic, and Evernorth. These five groups have partnered through the, quote, Vaccination Credential Initiative, end quote, to develop vaccine passports for Apple Wallet or Google Pay. The group goes so far as to say that people without smartphones, quote, could receive paper printed with QR codes containing W3C verifiable credentials, end quote, which would be a physical vaccine passport. Quote, as the world begins to recover from the pandemic, having electronic access to vaccination, testing, and other medical records will be vital to resume travel and more, said Mike Cecilia, Executive Vice President of Oracle's Global Business Units. Then, quote, this process needs to be as easy as online banking. We are committed to working collectively with the technology and medical communities as well as global governments to ensure people will have secure access to this information where and when they need it, end quote. I really love the part about secure access, especially with the back talk of how these systems are already been hacked before they've even been fully implemented, my friends. They go on, quote, with a single platform to help deliver safe and continuous operations and deepen trust with customers and employees, this coalition will be crucial to support public health and well-being, said Bill Patterson, Executive Vice President of CRM Applications at Salesforce. So Salesforce and Microsoft joined hundreds of other companies in opposing the recent Georgia election bill signed by Republican Governor Brian Kemp and mandate ID for absentee ballots. But regardless, both are crafting IDs for people to prove they have received the vaccine. Neither companies responded to the Federalist's request for a comment. Wow! Why am I totally unsurprised? My friends, this is what we're looking at. Then we got the last three. Healthvana, Carbon Health, and Othena. And while Democrat Governor Gavin Newsom said, quote, there are not current plans to impose, end quote, vaccine passports statewide in California, Los Angeles is working with these three groups on just such an initiative. In L.A. County, Healthvana is a major player that has managed the state's digital records since 2016, and in December 2020, the company began maintaining immunization records, becoming the first country in the U.S. to put forth such an initiative. And the city of Los Angeles, Carbon Health, has tapped to store vaccine records and be an appointment booker. Yeah. Quote, when a person receives their first or second dose of the COVID-19 vaccine at Carbon Health powered vaccination site, they will receive a discharge notification via SMS on their cell phones. That notification will contain a link to their digital health pass, said Carbon Health in a statement. And Orange County in Southern California is testing out vaccine passports with Othena, and the company likewise has crafted a digital application software for patients to book appointments and to provide those vaccine records. My friends, I had my first physical in 2 years with my primary care physician. Because last year, because of the pandemic, we couldn't have one. And at the end, I was asked, do I want the COVID-19 vaccine? I asked him a question. I said, is it a vaccine or is it an RNA resequencer? He turned to his assistant that was assisting him in my physical and said, mark him down as that he's declining the COVID-19 vaccine. He knew. He knew damn good and well it's an RNA resequencer. Yeah. Okay. When we come back, we'll have the Roy School of Guerrilla Lawfare, my friends. You're going to love this. So, you stay tuned because it's going to be a blistering one, which is why I'm going to need a whole hour for it. Don't you go anywhere. We will be right back.
Prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
$22 million Americans manage sleep apnea instead of resolving it. Sleep apnea increases risk of heart disease, depression, and death. New research from Rutgers University states the thyroid manufactures hormones used as neurotransmitters to regulate breathing during sleep. This suggests the thyroid gland needs balancing to address sleep apnea. So forget the CPAP machine. Call Apothecary Herbs for their sleep apnea herb formulas to remove cellular stress and feed the thyroid the nutrition it needs for better sleep. Call now to order 866-229-3663, 866-229-3663, or online at thepowerherbs.com. Thepowerherbs.com. Money-back guarantee with our organic professional strength formulas, because if you're serious about herbs, you need Apothecary Herbs.
Hey, does civilization seem stable to you? When 911 is busy or law enforcement decides to hide rather than protect you, don't worry. With Spike Training, you will know exactly what to do. Through a series of approximately 96 hours of video training seminars, Bo Greit, America's most decorated Green Beret commander, and his team of professional instructors brings his special forces training to your home through digital video. Delivered priority mail on a 128-gigabyte USB flash drive in 960 by 640 quality, you will receive the same instruction that Special Operations Command elite troops receive. There are no guarantees in life, but education and preparation always better your odds for survival. Go to bogreitz.us, that's B-O-G-R-I-T-Z.us, or avrn.tv to arrange to receive your 12 phases of Spike training. Single-phase downloads are also available on the site.
Warning, if you're here to feel good about government, if you believe that people in office actually care about your well-being, if you believe that statutes and codes are God's gift to man, this show is not for you. If you believe NBC, CNN, Faux News, and the like actually report real news, this show is not for you. This is a proper place where those beliefs need disposal of. So if you decide to stick around, this show will not be responsible for your mental instability. If you're brave enough to call in, this is your warning. You best bring facts to the discussion.
Damn government toilet. And welcome back to the Constitutional Crusader Show on the American Voice Radio Network. I'm your host, Dr. M. Roy Ben Shadler, constitutional counsel and still all around pain in the rear end to bureaucrats and petty thugs. Why, my friends? Because my job is very simple. It is to comfort the disturbed and to disturb the comfortable. And I do it the same way you do, my friends, by asking questions. But only if you support this show. See, this is not NPR. This is supported by you. Yes, you listening to my voice right now. So go to the very website you're probably listening to this show from and find out how to become a subscriber and subscribe to this show so that it can continue to bring you what we bring you, my friends. Sometimes biting satire, sometimes comedy, sometimes critical thinking, but always insightful analysis. And that's what we're going to do right now, my friends. It is, and by the way, for those of you just joining us, and you may not have heard this in the beginning of the show, this show is a show for thinkers, especially critical thinkers. And if you are a critical thinker, well, then you will really enjoy this show. If, however, you are a member of Media Matters, the Southern Poverty Law Center, or an IRS agent who is pretending to be a government agent and paid to listen to this show, well, we give you an exemption from thinking at all, because after all, if we was to require you to think, that would create a hostile work environment, and we don't want to be responsible for that. But for the rest of you, please join in. And for those of you that want to send a direct message to your host, you may do so to 541-248-9307. It is now time, my friends, for the Roy's School of Guerrilla Lawfare. That's L-A-W, for Learn and Win Through a Better Education. Yes, I need a full hour today, my friends, and I hope I have enough time even with that. With the first thing that I want to present to you, I want to prime your brain ever so slightly. See, I can only wonder if the flagging that is talked about in the first half of this means like something like relocating to such destination resorts as maybe Treblinka or Auschwitz. No, my friends, I'm serious. It is talk exactly like this that led to the erection of places like Chełmno, Belzec, Sobibor, Majnek, Treblinka, and Auschwitz, and the need for a final solution at those places. So keep that in mind, my friends, here, when you hear about the flagging. Because a father, teacher, blam elite private school for their obsession with race. See, the tide may be turning against the woke. In the past several weeks, two spectacular public letters hit the internet. One from a math teacher at the prestigious Grace Church School in Manhattan, and the other from a father of a student at the similarly glitzy Brearley School, also in Manhattan. And simultaneously, anecdotal evidence suggests that parents are showing up in record numbers to public school board meetings across the country. Here's what these brave dissenters are saying. Paul Rossi, in his scathing letter titled, "I Refuse to Stand By While My Students Are Indoctrinated," accuses Grace Church School of, quote, "inducing students via shame and sophistry to identify primarily with their race and requiring teachers like myself to treat students differently on the basis of race," end quote. And the wildest portion of his four-page letter is his description of how the school responded after he asked them inconvenient questions during a, quote, "mandatory whites-only student and faculty Zoom meeting," end quote. During this Zoom seminar, facilitators asserted that, quote, "objectivity, individualism, fear of open conflict, and even a right to comfort were characteristics of white supremacy." This caused Rossi to publicly question whether these, quote, "human attributes, many of them virtues reframed as vices, should be radicalized in this way," end quote. In the Zoom chat, Rossi also questioned, quote, "whether one must define oneself in terms of racial identity at all," end quote. Well, Rossi reports a few days later, the head of the school ordered all high school advisors to read a public reprimand of my, conduct out loud to every student in the school. It was a surreal experience, walking the halls alone and hearing the words of the reprimand emitting from each classroom, end quote. His letter also contains chilling passages, including his description of radical student conformity. According to Rossi, quote, dozens of students have privately expressed that, quote, in their classes and other discussions, they can never challenge any of the premises of our anti-racist teachings, end quote. He went on to say, quote, when I attended grade level and all school meetings about race or gender issues, I witnessed student after student sticking to a narrow script of acceptable responses. Teachers praise insights when they articulate the existing framework, and it is common for teachers to exhort students who remain silent that we really need to hear from you, end quote. My friends, if your blood is not chilling at that concept, you obviously have not fully grasped the implications therein, which George Orwell laid out in his book 1984, where if the state commands it, 2 + 2 must equal 5. Rossi recalls a faculty email thread in which staff eagerly suggested, quote, and here we go, my friends, officially flagging students who appear resistant to the culture we are trying to establish. My friends, I was raised in a half-Hebrew home. As that, I learned an awful lot about the Holocaust. I learned how it got started. I learned what went on before it got started. I learned about these things. And when I read this, I want to read it again to you, my friends, because my blood runs ill at the very thought of this language. So the staff were eagerly suggested to, quote, officially flag students who appear resistant to the culture we are trying to establish. Rossi said, quote, when I question what form this resistance takes, examples presented by a colleague included persisting with a colorblind ideology, or suggesting that we treat everyone with respect, or a belief in meritocracy, and finally, just silence, end quote. In one shocking passage, Rossi alleges that an administrator discouraged him from exposing his students to writings from the esteemed professor of economics at Brown University, Glenn Lowry, explicitly because Lowry is black. Now, Lowry, whose nuanced politics are broadly categorized as center-right, has written extensively on racial issues, a perspective which Rossi thought could be enriching for students. And according to Rossi, the administrator stated that, quote, the moment we are in, and institutionally and culturally, does not lend itself to dispassionate discussion and debate. And that, quote, mainstream white conservatives, end quote, are preferable sources for alternate views. Wow. According to Rossi, the administrator felt that exposure to compelling black conservative perspectives would, quote, only confuse or inflame students. End quote. Whoa. In retort, Rossi wrote, quote, I find it self-evidently racist to filter the dissemination of an idea based on the race of the person who espouses it. I find the claim that exposing 11th and 12th graders to diverse views on an important societal issue will only confuse them to be characteristics of a fundamentalist religion, not an educational philosophy, end quote. Exactly. According to an interview with the Daily Mail, Rossi has been, quote, relieved of his teaching duties, end quote, subsequent to publishing his letter. And just 3 days later, another open letter went viral, this time penned by a father of a middle school student at the Brearley School, likewise in Manhattan. In his withering, no-holds-barred critique, Andrew Gutman slammed the school for their, quote, cowardly and appalling lack of leadership, quote, end quote, and for, quote, appeasing an anti-intellectual, illiberal mob, and then allowing the school to be captured by that same mob, end quote. Regarding his decision to withdraw his child from Brearley, Gutman explains, quote, we can no longer have confidence that our daughter will receive the quality of education necessary to further her development into a critically thinking, responsible, enlightened, and civic-minded adult, end quote. Woo! Whoa! Among his litany of objections, Gutman cites primarily, quote, Brearley's obsession with race, end quote. He said, quote, I cannot tolerate a school that not only judges my daughter by the color of her skin, but encourages and instructs her to prejudge others by theirs, end quote. Yeah, exactly. He goes on and says, quote, by viewing every element of education, every aspect of history, and every facet of society through the lens of skin color and race, we are desecrating the legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and utterly violating the movement for which such civil rights leaders believed, fought, and died, end quote. Gutman then goes on to eviscerate half a dozen sacred cows of wokeness in rapid succession, launching first into his unvarnished opinion about systemic racism, saying, quote, we have not had systemic racism against blacks in this country since the civil rights reforms of the 60s, a period of more than 50 years. To state otherwise, he continues, quote, is a flat-out misrepresentation of our country's history and adds no understanding to any of today's societal issues. If anything, long-standing and widespread policies such as affirmative action point in precisely the opposite direction, end quote. Well, utterly unapologetic, Gutman continues objecting to Brearley's, quote, vacuous, inappropriate, and fanatical use of words such as equity, diversity, and inclusiveness. And he insisted that, quote, if the administration was genuinely serious about diversity, it would not insist on the indoctrination of its students and their families into a mindset most reminiscent of the Chinese Cultural Revolution, end quote. Yeah, I told you the guy had held nothing back. He then next moved on to objections to the anti-racist, quote-unquote, claptrap infecting academics at Brearley, stating, quote, I object to the gutting of the history, civics, and classical literature curriculums and the censorship of books that have been taught for generations because they contain dated language potentially offensive to the thin-skinned and hypersensitive, end quote. Gutman then warns, quote, our nation will not survive a generation of leadership even more poorly educated than we have now, nor will it survive a generation of students taught to hate its own country and despise its history, end quote. And in his conclusion, Gutman implores fellow parents to speak up, assuring them that, quote, there is safety in numbers, end quote, and that, quote, the numbers are there, end quote. He signs off with a plea to Brearley parents, quote, for the sake of our community, our city, our country, and most of all, our children, silence is no longer an option, end quote. Well, my friends, similar glimpses of radical dissent are cropping up across the country at local high school board meetings with accelerating regularity. For example, I've seen a video of a father of two in Dripping Springs, Texas, decrying the trend toward political indoctrination in classrooms, citing critical race theory, the 1619 Project, and gender theory. The audience applause can be heard erupting mid-speech, and like Gutman writes, many parents are not so on board with the radical encroachment of politics into K-12 classrooms, and they're starting to find their voice. Now, my friends, the question is asked, and I will post it here for you, my friends. Have you spoken up at your school or workplace? If you have, contact GHOWE at dailywire.com or Instagram at Georgia May Howe, GORGIAMAEHOWE. And make your voice be heard, my friends. If you've got similar experiences that you've had, or you know of them, at least firsthand to you, share them, because it will take a revolution of us standing up to this claptrap for it to be ceased. But at the very least, as I said before, We are dissident, my friends. I said this several weeks ago. We are no longer in control of our own country. We are dissidents, and we have to act as dissidents. And as acting as dissidents, we need to collect the names of these people that are suffering at these things, like this father and this teacher, so that we can give them aid and comfort. And when the purges are done, we can reinstate them, if still alive, to higher positions than they hold now, simply because they were ones that stood up. Yeah. Because we really need to, my friends. So, I feel compelled to find, so I'm clicking on the find thing, pictures, and let's see if I can find this. Martin Niemöller quote. No, I don't want the one redone for Muslims. Where is it? That's the one redone for Muslims. Come on, where's... I'm looking for it. Ah, there we go. To remind you, my friends, first they came for the socialists, and I did not speak out because I was not a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionists, and I did not speak out because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews, and I did not speak out because I was not a Jew. Then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak for me. Yes. He was later, after he published that, imprisoned for opposing the Nazi regime. Yes, and that's what we have to look forward to, my friends. So I thought I'd share that with you because it's important. Yes. Yeah, so when we come back from the upcoming break, my friends, we'll have part two of our law school segment, which will be on the inevitable end of a ruling elite and the whys and hows of it, my friends. It's not going to be pretty, but you need to hear it. You're listening to the Constitutional Crusader Show on the American Voice Radio Network. Don't you go anywhere. We will be right back.
Apothecary Herbs announces a brand new formula to help balance blood pressure from head to foot, strengthen your heart muscle, and reduce cholesterol. Now you have a professional strength alternative that works all without fear or worry of serious side effects. Empower yourself. Become independent from the expensive drugs. Call Apothecary Herbs and ask for heart, blood pressure, and cholesterol formula toll-free. 866-229-3663. Or online at thepowerherbs.com. Heart, blood pressure, and cholesterol formula is just $24.95 and comes with a money-back guarantee. So get a pencil and write this down. Apothecary Herbs, toll-free, 866-229-3663, or on the web at thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
So things fall apart. Do you know how to defend yourself using a Coupaton, pepper gas spray, or Taekwondo techniques? After spike training, you will. What about how to enter a securely locked installation or vehicle? After spike training, you will. What about street confrontation shooting, or how to organize the virtually untrained into force multipliers, or caching techniques to secure valuable and sensitive items on your person, within structures, and in the field, or combat assault rappelling, or instinctive shooting, or something as simple as knot tying and rope making? Well, after spike training, you will. And I have only mentioned a few of the subjects covered only up to phase 6. Go to bogrites.us, that's bogrites.us, or avrn.tv to arrange to receive your 12 phases of spike training. Single phase downloads are also available on the site.
And welcome back to the Constitutional Crusaders Show on the American Voice Radio Network. I'm your host, Dr. Emroy Ben Shadler, constitutional counsel and still all around pain in the rear end of bureaucrats and petty thugs all over. Today is still Monday, June 21st, and we are in the middle. Yes, we are in the middle of our law school segment, the Roy's School of Guerrilla Lawfare, my friends. If you missed the first half of it, you missed something very, very chilling and very, very somber and very, very much reminding me of exactly the same type of language and thought processes that led to people being led to such destination resorts, if you will, such as Treblinka and Auschwitz. And now I want to give the antidote to that. And that is this. From a... He writes under a pseudonym, my friends, and when you understand what he's writing about, you'll understand why he's writing under a pseudonym, but he identifies himself as a longtime career Marine, colonel, and says it's the inevitable end of a ruling elite, that the ruling elite appear comfortable delivering the command, submit to traditional America, and are not concerned with the consequences that will follow such a command, my friends. And I really should have wiped my glasses during the break, because I'm like going, why am I having such difficulty seeing the screen? I've got a little big smudge in the middle of one of my lenses, and that explains why I have to keep bobbing my head around. There we go. Much better. Oh, my Lord. Well, sometimes. So, my friends, the inevitable end of a ruling elite. Let's start with, well, some words out of that ancient law book that you may be familiar with. For they have sown the wind and shall reap the whirlwind. The stalk has no bud, it will produce no flower. Were it to yield grain, foreigners would swallow it up, end quote. That being Hosea 8, verse 7. So as America prepares to depart its first stop, that would be Afghanistan, in the forever war on terror, and shifts its focus onto the domestic political opposition, there has been much dishonest talk equating the ideology of conservative Americans with
foreign terror groups such as Al-Qaeda and ISIS. Such talk is opportunistic fear-mongering from the worst of Washington's nomenclatura. Conservative and independent thought in America is not an extremist terrorist ideology, and to even hint at it is a bold lie and a sign of nefarious intent on the part of the ruling elites and their backers in the national security apparatus. Though America failed to win in any of its global war on terrorism franchise fights, there are some lessons from these failures that the Washington establishment should consider before they roll the global war on terrorism to the domestic front. These lessons are in the area of human behavior. War, or for that matter, any sustained armed conflict, creates its own human behavioral ecosystem. All parties suffer the damage wrought by armed conflict in their moral, social, and behavioral norms. In other words, conflict has a way of leading to unsound decisions that end up making enemies where once none existed, and in the process creates dilemmas that we cannot overcome. It is the crux of both counterinsurgency and counterterrorism operations that the strategy and tactics employed should not create more insurgency or terrorism than existed prior to their initiation. You know, that makes really good sense. So it's the basis for the concept of, you know, winning via hearts and minds versus hammers and anvil. So, there's the counterterrorism lesson. As this Marine Colonel says, I am not, nor have I ever been, a part of the Washington establishment. My experience, he writes, comes from nearly three decades working in the military and intelligence communities, including multiple assignments to military and interagency counterterrorism programs. These programs supported both counterinsurgency and counterterrorism missions and involved up close and personal fighting against designated enemy combatants and Islamic extremist groups. As a result, he reports, I have witnessed firsthand successful visionary tactics as well as utter train wrecks of strategy, and even situations where one could not properly say there was a strategy at all. Counterterrorism and counterinsurgency are different mission sets, but can also be two sides of the same coin. Often, the counterterrorism mission is embedded within the overall counterinsurgency mission. This was the case for most of my experiences, he reports. While the conventional military and regular special operation forces fought insurgents, we focused on the transnational terrorist nexus. Our niche was specifically leadership targets. You know, think about that, you know, that Iranian general, if you will, okay? These were designated terror organizations' leadership, foreign fighters with specialized skills who were assisting
certain insurgent leaders and designated third country nationals involved in facilitating such operations. The more he talks, the more he sounds like he's describing Soleimani to a T, my friends. In the overall war machine, we were niche players hunting niche players. In the embedded counterterrorism environment, there is a significant difference between how terrorists and insurgents behave when facing hostile actions from units like the one I belong to. Insurgents are normally citizens or residents of the country in which they are fighting. Because of that, they have familial, tribal, and political connections within society. If cornered and facing the option between death and surrender, insurgents will often choose surrender. This is because, in their minds, there is a possibility of life after capture. If they surrender, once they are sent to a local host nation's detention facility, they can leverage their familial, tribal, and political connections to eventually gain release. And if they wish, they can then re-enter the fight or not. In contrast, third country national, foreign fighters and transnational terrorists who are not citizens of the country in which they are fighting generally have few, if any, acceptable post-capture options. They have none of the familial, tribal, or political connections that make buying or negotiating their way out of detention a possibility. This makes them less inclined to throw down their weapon and surrender when the American green-eyed devil shows up in the middle of the night. They understand their unique status with U.S. forces as unlawful enemy combatants means that they stand a good chance of disappearing into the special or indefinite detention of a variety of horrifying locations and conditions. They have zero expectation of seeing a fair trial, and because they are effectively human plutonium, no tribal leader or local political official is going to rescue them. They intimately comprehend that what awaits them is worse than death. Once they're cornered, without hope of escape, they choose death over surrender because for them, there is no tomorrow. They fight hard. He reports saying, I watched them barricade themselves in rooms and fight to the death. I witnessed them using women and children as human shields and even blow themselves up in a final show of defiance. Wow, sounds a lot like the Palestinian situation he's talking about. He goes on, and in the end for them, it was nothing but shouts of Allah Akbar, followed by anything goes, because ultimately, death is always preferable to a fate one esteems worse than death. He reports, during my time in the counterterrorism world, it was normal to perceive our enemy as evil, an Al-Qaeda madman, a terrorist thug, or fanatical Islamic extremist. A lot of them were, but not all. Some were fighting us solely because we were fighting them, a bizarre gladiatorial pit fight set up and run by the power-hungry zealots and the Daddy Warbucks crowd. He reports, I think there might be a parallel in there somewhere with our currently divided nation. Ultimately, it doesn't matter what country you come from, what god you worship, or what political ideology you believe in. When a man has no options, when no hope remains, when for him there is no tomorrow, He will fight with ferocity and fury not of this world. It is worth considering this fact, written in the history from Thermopylae to the Alamo and to the Warsaw Ghetto, when attempting to impose one's will on another. So, he says, after 20 years of bullets, bombs, and bodies, did we achieve anything? Did we win the war? Did we really impose our will on the enemy? He says, I'd have to say, in the macro, we didn't do any of that. They're still there, though with different names, still committed to ridding themselves of us. It was folly to think they wouldn't be. Instead, we fell into the trap that Nietzsche warned of in Beyond Good and Evil, where he said, quote, he who fights with monsters might take care lest he thereby becomes a monster. And if you gaze for long into an abyss, the abyss gazes also into you, end quote. He then speaks on our origins of violence. Two phrases taken together probably constitute the origin of violence and conflict throughout the history of mankind. They are the imperative command, submit, and the responsive challenge, or what? He says, I'm guessing billions have died as a result of that conversation because the follow-on to or what is when the stabbing, hacking, shooting, and bombing starts. If one wishes to avoid that violence, it's best to avoid forcing that discussion. In war, there is a military strategy called the Golden Bridge. It is used when fighting a determined and powerful opponent that you may be able to defeat but not completely destroy. The Golden Bridge is a path for a defeated enemy to retreat from the battlefield. This idea comes from the Chinese military strategist Sun Tzu, who wrote in The Art of War, quote, do not push too hard on a desperate enemy, end quote, as this will cause him to fight to the death, which in the end inflicts a much higher cost for your own forces. The goal is to defeat the enemy with the least number of casualties and expenditures of resources on one's own side, thus maintaining the strength and capabilities of your own army, and in the case of internal conflicts, maintaining a recoverable semblance of order. Now, the opposite of the Golden Bridge is the World War II German army strategy of Kettling. Kettling comes from the German word for cauldron, that is, Kessel. It is used against one's enemy in order to destroy it or force its unconditional surrender. There is no retreat allowed, and the objective is to isolate the enemy and cause the maximum amount of misery and chaos prior to a final crushing attack. So, if we examine what is happening in America now, it's possible to make out the initial shape of the ruling elite strategy vis-a-vis their political opposition, and it looks like a cauldron. Through legislative actions such as the Domestic Terrorism Prevention Act, H.R. 1, federalizing voting law, gun control, Supreme Court packing, and D.C. and Puerto Rico state initiatives, one can see the kettle forming. If you don't see a golden bridge, it's because there isn't one. If we listen to the words of the politicians and their bureau rat handlers in Washington, we can hear the language of the imperative submit with no post-caption options. And if we look at the current zero-sum game of political warfare, cancel culture, and the weaponization of the Justice Department, federal law enforcement, and intelligence agency, we can deliberate preparations to answer traditional Americans, or what response? And the ruling elite appears comfortable in delivering the command, submit to traditional America. They're not concerned with the consequences that will follow, but they are not fighters. And as such, they plan to use their weaponized federal agencies and useful idiot brown shirts to do the dirty work. And in their ignorance and arrogance, they believe employing proxy by violence by proxy is a safe strategy. They do not see the reaper that is staring directly at them. And left to their own devices, the inevitable result of their mistake will be chaos and some version of armed conflict and most likely the end of our republic as we know it. And for traditional Americans, it is worth considering now whether this is an acceptable future. So now we come to sowing the wind, which is what we started with, my friend. You know, sow the wind, reap the whirlwind has a long history in America as a cautionary scripture instructing restraint from self-destructive behavior. But what of the people who sow the wind in order to call forth the whirlwind as a weapon against their enemies? What of people who call forth the whirlwind because, despite the horrible destruction it will bring to their fellow men, they believe they will in some way profit from the misery? What do we, America, do with these people? How can we afford to tolerate them in our midst? The elite, well, they have a plan. They believe they will be fine because they're counting on your submission. If anything remotely unanticipated happens, they can safely escape to their Martha's Vineyard estate, their compounds in Montana, or their razor wire fortresses in Washington, D.C., while things get sorted out by the loyal apparatchik. See, much as Karl Rove did during the George W. Bush administration, the elites suffer from the substantial hubris of believing that they can create their own reality. They are undeservedly impressed with their own status and legend, having brought a once strong nation to the brink of disaster through malevolent and corrupt leadership and election theft. As such, they remain oblivious to the lessons from 20 years of fruitless wars and the folly of trying to impose one's will on another. So in reality, they are not strong enough or smart enough to wield the command, submit. So having picked up the sword, they will watch it be taken from their hands and then used against them by their very enemy, traditional Americans, who understand there will be no tomorrow, and who, in whose eyes there is a fierceness, a fury that is beyond their world. It will be a fatal miscalculation that will bring about the downfall of a cursed and failed American ruling elite, and perhaps, if we can recapture the founding principles of our republic, the beginning of a new and better governance by and for the people, one truly dedicated to liberty and justice for all. There you go, my friends. And yes, I am deliberately bringing you these things. I've been hanging on to these things for almost 2 months now, trying to figure out a really good time to present them. And I decided that today would be a really good time. because we are coming up very soon, in case you hadn't noticed, on July 4th. Yeah, my friends. So, I want to remind you that in Philadelphia, on July 4th, 1776, a bunch of guys got together and wrote a letter to their king. The letter was very eloquent and well thought out, but it basically boiled down to this. Dear King George, you're not the boss of us. Sincerely, a bunch of troublemakers. That's essentially what the Declaration of Independence was, my friends. A bunch of radicals declaring that they would no longer recognize the right of their king to rule them at all, ever again. And they went on to create a new boss, which turned into a new oppressor. But I'll get to that in a moment. Actually, I've just been talking about it for half an hour, my friends. But I want you to consider the essence of this attitude. The one of, you're not the boss of me. Because this July 4th, millions of Americans should be celebrating Independence Day for the first time in 2 years, thanks to the pandemic last year, with parades, picnics, fireworks, and so on. But how many of those people celebrating have ever actually considered what the Declaration was actually about and what the colonialists actually did? See, these colonialists did not merely beg the king to change his ways. In fact, the Declaration explains how they had tried that to no avail. And instead, the colonists were doing something far more drastic. My friends, in short, they committed treason. They broke the law. They disobeyed their government. They were traitors, criminals, and tax cheats in the eyes of the crown. See, the Boston Tea Party, as I want to remind you, was not merely a tax protest, but open lawlessness. And furthermore, truth be told, some of the colonists were, well, shall we say, even cop killers. See, at Lexington, when King George's law enforcers told the colonists to lay down their guns, the colonists responded with, no, you're not the boss of us. Well, that was the meaning, if not the exact verbiage. And so we had that shot heard round the world, widely regarded as the beginning of the American Revolution. And now looking back, we know the outcome. We know who eventually won, and we don't mind cheering the rebels, but make no mistake, when you cheer for the founders of this country, you are cheering for lawbreakers and traitors, as well you should. But for all the flag-waving and celebrating that goes on every July 4th, do Americans actually believe in what the colonists did? Do they really believe in the attitude expressed in the Declaration of Independence? Are they really still capable of supporting a mantra of you are not the boss of me? That's what you have to think about now for the next week, my friends, because I've run out of time. That concludes this edition of the Constitutional Crusader Show on the American Voice Radio Network. Until next week, my friends, unless the creek rises or they come and take me away again, my fellow Americans, keep your powder dry.